From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made in a recording studio where this song, Sister Saintly, was being recorded by the band Roscoe's Basement. Its lead singer was back in front of a microphone after a long hiatus, one that lasted more than a decade. But now, back in the studio and back on stage, he felt at home. You'll hear more from that singer in just a few moments. He's one of many people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s, and 90s, and above, who have decided to revisit their passions or explore new ones as an antidote for boredom, or maybe to work through anxiety or depression, or to find new meaning and purpose. As Laura Holson recently wrote in the New York Times, quote, "Who needs a Ferrari when you can pick up a paintbrush?" End quote. It was part of a piece in which she called creativity the cure for the midlife crisis. This hour, we're not just talking about the midlife crisis. We're revisiting passions and opportunities to find new ones at certain stages of life. Our guests will share their stories with us and take us on their journeys, and we want to hear from you as well, listeners. Joining me in studio, Jack Furyk, a critic at large for PopDose.com and the current lead singer for the band Roscoe's Basement that you just heard. Welcome back to the program, Jack.
Good to be back.
Jack Barron is the president and COO of Sweetwater Energy, and he's a member of the band You Don't Know Jack.
Thanks,
Welcome
Megan.
Welcome to you. Also joining me in studio, Laura Fleming. She's a licensed clinical social worker, a comedy improviser, and a quilter. Welcome to you, Laura.
Thanks, Megan.
And Lorraine Fusar. Did I get it?
Yes.
I got it. Lorraine Fusar is a dabbler in the arts. She's an artist in poetry and painting and pie making and many, many things. Thank you for joining us, Lorraine.
Thank you.
So I'd like to start off our hour because we'll be hearing all of our guest stories in just a few moments. And listeners, again, you can join us. But I want to talk about that piece in the New York Times that was brought to my attention by a friend who is revisiting her passion for singing. She's in her early 30s. She stopped singing for a long time because she started a business. She got very busy, but she realized that she missed it. So she started talking to a vocal coach. And she sent me this article because she said, "This describes me." So here's Laura Olson. Holson. She says, quote, "In this era of mindfulness and today's preoccupation with pursuing a meaningful life, a new antidote has emerged to cure the doldrums of midlife, creativity. Creativity classes and seminars for those in their 40s and 50s are thriving. So are books devoted to creating a meaningful life plan ahead of retirement. Some experts chalk up the goings-on to the do-it-yourself maker movement, which means that it's easier for older Americans to take up new activities. Others experience creativity as an outlet to combat anxiety and depression. Still, more people want to bolster a flagging career or reinvent themselves." End quote. So I'd just like to go around the table. All of you are re-exploring your passions, finding new ones, and I'd just like to find about why. Why are you back in music? Why are you back painting? Why are you back improvising? We'll start with you, Jack Furyk, because this was your show idea.
Yeah. and if you want to know more, I write a column about my experiences in the band at PopDose, which I kind of jokingly call Too Old to Rock and Roll, Too Young to Die, which kind of gives you the dilemma, you know? I mean, we all get the same thing. We all get a lifetime. Some are longer than others. But the central question is, you know, what am I going to do to fill this time? And doing something meaningful like the arts, it's a way to stave off despair, yeah? And I think the point of mindfulness is very important. It's about looking at what do I love to do. And, you know, how can I carve out more time in my life to do this thing that I love to do? For me, I've been a working musician since I was in my teens. And I did take a long hiatus. I had a bunch of gear get stolen. And that kind of put me off for a long time, for more than a decade. And then I was getting to a point where, you know, my oldest kid is finishing up college. You know, our youngest has got a couple of years left in high school, so being a stay-at-home dad is no longer such an intense responsibility. And, you know, what do I do with that time? What am I good at? What do I like to do? How do I find a way to make that a part of my life? And doing it with other people, I find was the easiest way for me to make that commitment again.
Was it an easy transition for you to make?
The hardest part about it is getting over the fear. Once you're back in the room with the instruments, with the microphones, talking to the people, it's like, with this particular band, with Roscoe's Basement, I knew from the first night I went in to try out. It was like playing with old friends. And it's only gotten better from there. It's that initial hurdle of, oh man, is it too late? Am I too old? Do I still have any chops? But then you get out there and you do it, and it all comes back.
Jack, did you have a similar experience revisiting your glory days in rock?
Surprisingly, yes. I was away from, I had a hiatus of about 9 years, and my wife, Lisa, God bless her, about 18 years ago, she said, you need to get back into a band. And so I called a couple of friends of mine, and they introduced me to Mike Vidala, who's the CEO of Summit Federal Credit Union. He was putting together a band again, and so I went and tried out, like Jack Furyk just said, and wondering the same things. Do I have my chops? Am I going to be valuable to this kind of band? And I ended up in that band for 9 years, and then it kind of takes on a life of its own. Then I was really back in, and work was going well, and Lisa and I bought a house on the bay, and we built a recording studio, so I got really into it, and still keep buying gear. I don't know that this will ever pay for itself. But
well, retail therapy is another way that people deal with blood prices.
That's right. It's so true, Jack. But it's so much fun, and I think one advantage you've got when you do get older, you've got a lot of experience, and you learn. I've learned how to songwrite, and now I've learned how to publish. I learned how to work in the studio. You learn how to collaborate, both at work, and then you can kind of carry that over into the music realm, and that's fabulous. And I'm working with two really young people in my current band, a 24-year-old and a 21-year-old, and I'm helping them learn how to songwrite and publish, and because they're actually thinking about taking it as their career forward, and it's exciting to be doing that now.
Laura, I know you probably have a lot to say about the concept of fear and following the fear with your work in improv, but tell us how and why you decided to get back into your passions.
Well, I looked up the Erickson stages just to make sure I had this right. And the seventh stage of development from your 40s through your 60s is generativity versus stagnation. And once work is set and the kids are good without you, you got to find something else to do so you don't stagnate and get depressed. I still had a kid at home, and I was trying to make him take improv classes because he's hilarious, and I thought he'd be really good at it, and he kept blowing me off, so. Back in the day when I did my training, I was training as a family therapist, and I learned that if you're really pushing your kid to do something, you must want to do it yourself. So I signed up for a class, and I just thought it would be fun. I thought I'd be good at it. I wasn't. I had to learn a lot, and but it was fun. And then I signed up for the next class, and then the director told me I was on the cast, and I was like, no, that's not what I was doing here. I was just playing. But I came to a show and ended up on the stage, and I realized that I love that too. Performing is great. So that's how I got into that.
And your quilting, that's another piece of your...
Yes. So my sister and I used to sew a lot when we were kids. We discovered our mother was so impressed that we could do that, that she'd buy us fabric whenever we wanted, and she would not buy us clothing whenever we wanted. So we learned to make clothing, and we got really good at it because we did it a lot. And then, of course, you know, like it fell by the wayside, and I took a quilting class just, you know, because the kids were all settled in school, and I had the time, and got my sister into it, and now she's like a master quilter, and I'm an amateur, but we both like kind of dragged each other through that, so it's another fun thing that I do.
I love that. Lorraine, you were, a very talented artist. I know you were very involved in high school.
Well, I had just one course in high school, however, and that was it, and almost failed the college course for a different reason. But I've had a thought about it, and when my third child was 11 days old, and I'm 31, I went up to the high school and started the art classes and continued that for quite a few years until PTA and church and all the games and all the activities of my four children took that away. It didn't take it away. I put it away because I didn't have enough time and should not be out that many nights a week. So after my husband died, my second son said to me, "Mom, why don't you come back and do art again?" So I went back to the high school and I began, and I have not stopped. But in this age process, I look at some of the things I've done and I said, "Wow, they were good. What's happening now? You seem stuck." Mm-hmm. But I've hit on a wonderful mentor art person, and she has helped me gain a new freedom. And now I can say, do not mess with my painting day.
I also know you're known for your pies. So your pies and your poetry, I'm told.
Yes. My pies are because I've always baked and wanted to be like my mom. But then I became an adult ed teacher for adults, and I included men, even though I'm not being, prejudiced, but they did good. They did well. And so I began to teach the hockey moms how to bake pies, and then they baked 200 pies. And then I taught the church moms, and they made 200 pies. And then I could step back a little bit. However, it didn't stop me last night for here, so just so you know. And anyway, it is a love, and it's something that I can carry forward. And reaching a decade that none of these people are close to, I've decided to photograph my photos, my paintings, and make note cards for my people I love.
Oh, that's very nice. Laura's reacting to your comment.
Right? I can't. How old can you possibly be? You're going to tell me?
Sure.
Are you going to break some news?
Oh, it's on.
It's okay. I'm going to reach 80 in the fall.
Good. Awesome. So, that is awesome. Yeah,
that's great.
I knew I was a senior moment here.
You all mentioned something about, am I ready to do this again? Or I'm scared. How do I know that I can get up on stage or get back behind the microphone? Is it true to say there's a stigma out there that, some of these things are, quote unquote, a young person's game? I don't agree with that, but some people may think it is. Jack, you've talked a little bit about that, how to not necessarily compete, but find a place where the culture might be dominated by younger voices. So how do you feel about that stigma, and how can we work to get past it?
I think it's blatantly untrue. I think if... Again, I've been doing this for a long time, and I think I'm definitely a better songwriter and a better musician than I used to be. When I started with this band, I had a backlog of about 100 songs, of which about 10 were any good. When I wrote them, years and years ago, I couldn't tell you which ones were good and which ones weren't. So, I mean, just developing that discernment, I think, has been valuable. Being able to apply experience, it just makes sense that if you do something a lot over a long period of time, you get better at it. That's why they call it practice. I've seen bands, and younger performers who don't know how to pace a set, who don't know how to work an audience, who don't know how to put variety in the show so it all starts to seem very monotonous. But when you see people who've played a lot, whether they're young but they just, they play a lot of gigs in a year, or if they've just been doing it for a long, long time, you pick up those skills. And I think being a seasoned veteran performer, I think, it gives you more of that professionalism, and makes it easier to work a crowd, to hold a crowd. That's true of the performing arts, and I mean with visual arts as well. You know, the more you do it, the better you get at it. It just makes sense. You're supposed to, isn't it? What, 10,000 hours you're supposed to put into a new skill before you get it? Before you get any good at it, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's a lot of hours.
It is. But when you think about, I started playing guitar when I was 7.
Yeah.
You think about all the hours you've put in and all the band hours, which some of which are fruitful and some not so much because bands are challenging. You know, you've got like a 4 or 5 or 6 person marriage kind of you're carrying on in bands. And you know, one advantage you've got now though is you've got a lot of young talent in this town, a lot of really great musical talent. And we're all kind of trying to work together to get better and move forward in our careers. So in the 20, I'm working with a singer, Alexandria Ambergia. She's 21. And a great guitarist, Blake Irvin, who's 24. And they're really talented people. And so they actually are at an age and at a talent level where they really could carry that on into a musical career. But like everybody, they need help. Mm-hmm. And so I can give them some help in terms of guidance, in terms of songwriting, and help them get published and get some songs, actually some material. Because one thing that I know Jack Furyk knows, and I think really Laura and Lorraine know too, you have to have product. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to create something that you get out there, whether it's visual arts or in music. These are forms of communication. You know, we're really telling a story with our paintings or with our songs, and depending on who you want to reach, you know, with rock and roll, I want to reach a lot of people, you know, with rock music. It's fun, and that's a big part of the reason I do it. I mean, I'm just having a great time.
Mm. And I think that community aspect is a big part of it as well. Band I'm in right now, I'm one of 3 songwriters in the band, you know. And we're constantly kind of egging each other on, supporting each other in that way. And you know, and when we play, you know, we've played the Bug Jar, you know, on a multi-band bill. And, you know, the collective age of our band, we've generally, you know, each member has, you know, probably 10 to 20 years on the other bands that are playing. But it doesn't matter. You know, I'm standing in the back cheering on, you know, some 19-year-old who's come down from Buffalo, you know, and they're doing the same for us. And it's a great feeling.
Let's dive into each of your stories then. We'll start with you, Jack, because you sent me, we heard a little bit of your first song, Sister Saintly. Let's cue that up again, Rob, and listen to a little bit of that while Jack tells his, the beginnings of the band.
Okay.
To us. There we go.
By the way, credit where it's due. The music for this was written by Mike Mann, who is our former guitarist and still a great friend of the band. So this is a successful collaboration, if talking about being part of a community. The band was already in existence when I joined up, and it was people who'd been kicking around the Rochester music scene for a while. The lead singer who had just left was a guy who had one of his bucket list things was to try singing in a rock and roll band, and he tried it and he decided he didn't like it. So, you know, I've heard some of the recordings. He had a terrific voice, but he had no stage presence, and he hadn't really. Sorry, Phil. But you know,
let's listen to a little bit of you though. So let's give this a listen. Tell us about this one, Jack.
Sure. Well, this actually is interesting because it is part of, the lyric came out of a backlog of material. It was a song that I had written years and years before about a relationship, about, you know, relating to a woman almost as a divine figure. Now, when I wrote the lyric in my 20s and 30s, or, you know, whenever it was, you know, I wrote it fairly straight. But looking back at it now, I'm like, oh, my God, that's a little bit of a, that's ridiculous, you know. That's no way to have a relationship with somebody, you know, to put them up on that pedestal. So I kind of, when I reworked the lyric, I kind of gave it a little bit of that twist of irony to it. And, So again, it's even taking your own stuff with the benefit of hindsight, you can recast old songs. So nothing's wasted, you know. I wrote those 100 songs and maybe 90 of them weren't very good, but there's a line here, a line there, an idea that you can draw on. There's always diamonds in the rubble, you know. You have to look for them, and you put them in new settings. So,
you're back with the band. You're now the lead singer of Roscoe's Basement.
Yep.
I know you've got a story about an amp that I read in your blog. I really like that for a number of reasons, but the way that you set it up, and you can find this at popdose.com.
Yep.
We'll link it on our podcast page. You just described this like sea of young people and them not really knowing what the equipment was, and your wife was going to buy you a gift.
Right.
So walk us through this.
Sure. Well, I had been out of a band for years and years because I had an entire PA system stolen out of the back of my car. I had been playing solo coffee house gigs around, and I thought, well, you know, I want to get back into music. What can I do that's going to cost me the least amount of money to get set up with? So I figured, well, you know what? I got a bass. If I get a decent bass amp, I can go out and start auditioning for bands. So my wife said, you know what? Your 49th birthday is coming up. I'm going to take you out. I'm going to buy you a bass amp. So we walk into Guitar Center on a Saturday morning, and there's just all these unaccompanied minors, most of whom seemed like their parents had just dumped them off on a Saturday morning to keep them out of their hair. So, you know, you got the kid over in the corner, you know, crucifying Led Zeppelin on, you know, and somebody else playing the riff to Smells Like Teen Spirit, but not quite right, you know what I mean? And I just, you know, kids were there to window shop, you know, basically. And I came in and I said, I am leaving here with a bass amp. So give me a bass to try it out on and show me some amps, you know. And they were like, oh, here's a paying customer. You know, here is somebody who knows what he wants. And I sat down and I hadn't played through a decent amp in a long, long time. And I got that thing where you feel it in your chest, you know. I wasn't playing real loud because there was a billion people there, and you know I was right out on the shop floor. But you get that feeling in your chest, and you're like, oh yeah, I know this is right. And then you stand up and you feel it going up your legs, you know, and yeah, this is right for me. And it was going back to a feeling that I knew well, and it just felt right, you know. That's a lot of it is not intellectual, it's instinctual, it's just, does this feel right? And yeah, that felt right.
How has it helped you in your everyday life outside of the music? Does it apply to your work? Do you feel happier? Do you feel less stressed? Do you feel free?
I do feel a little less stressed because, I mean, my work, my day job, I'm an editor and proofreader, and I do freelance writing, and those are all solitary pursuits. You know, and there are times when I'll be writing something and I'll be all jazzed up. I'll be like, yeah, but there's nobody there to share it. And there's nothing to compare with kind of, you know, standing in a circle, making eye contact with five other people. We actually had rehearsal just last night and it was great, you know, and there were a bunch of moments where you look around the room and you're like, oh yeah, this is working. And it's that feeling of community. It's that feeling of mutual. We're all each other's biggest fan. You know, these are people. Like I said, I had not known them. These were not people that I knew. And it's funny. We don't socialize much outside of the band, but when we're there, boy, it is ride or die. It really does. It really is very fulfilling. Yeah.
So what are you guys working on now?
We're kind of on hiatus for the summer. We're gonna be booking some gigs, hopefully soon. If you want to keep apprised of that, you can always look at our Facebook page, or you can follow Roscoe's Basement on Twitter, or you can follow me on Twitter at Jack Furyk if you like that kind of thing. So,
do you guys have an album out, or are you working on one?
Not really. No, I mean we're concentrating primarily on doing live shows. Recording is not out of the question. But it's mainly just a question of money. I mean, what we've got, the demos that I sent you were actually done for a student product, student project, I should say, by an undergrad at Finger Lakes Community College. So they're a little rough around the edges. It was a learning experience for him, and it was a learning experience for a lot of us too. I mean, I'd done some studio work, and our bass player Craig, who used to be in the Muska Movers, did some studio work back in the past. But we're kind of getting our feet wet on that.
So are the two Jacks going to do a battle of the bands? Should we do it now?
No, probably not. But, you know, it's funny you say that because I'm working. My wife Lisa's over at Greentopia. She's chairman there. And they're talking about an event in the springtime, which is a Brews on the Bridge, which we might actually start talking to folks who are in business who have bands. That's actually the latest idea from Michael Phillipson and Lisa. And do an annual battle of the bands out on the bridge. The folks at North American Breweries involved, and that'd be kind of fun. So it'd be more like folks who are either CEOs or involved in business with bands. It'd just be a good time. Mm. And battle of the bands, sure, why not? You know, it's all in good fun.
Have your people call my people, babe.
You know what the show is called. See, we don't disappoint. So Jack Barron, how did You Don't Know Jack get started? Is that a band you started?
Yeah, actually, You Don't Know Jack is really my cover rock band, and so that plays out around town. The original project is called Jack Barron and the Third Rail. So we've got my first album, kind of old for a first album, I guess, but first album, full album, 12 songs, coming out now. So it'll be out actually on Spotify and Amazon within the next couple of weeks. We're doing an album release party out at Iron Smoke Distillery in Fairport on October 25th. And it's kind of early in the evening, so all my friends my age can come out and listen to it and have fun. We're going to be charging admission for that, but all the money's going to Greentopia to benefit Greentopia and that not-for-profit downtown. So that's kind of exciting. So look for that. We'll be out on the airwaves with that over the course of the next few weeks. The album is a rock album. It's got kind of a Stevie Ray Vaughan influence part of it, but it's got some acoustic rock on it and then a bit of jazz, actually. So one of the songs is...
Let's listen to one, which we've got four. Jack, which one did you want to listen to?
Let's listen to Who Is He? That's kind of the jazziest song on the album, and I'll tell you kind of the story behind that a little bit.
That's tasty.
Thanks. We brought in a sax player, Ignatius Marino from Nazareth. Cherith Meeks is playing piano there. So it's a song that's it's a duet, actually. So all these things are collaborations, and they're collaborations across the age spectrum. Cherith's in her 30s. Ignatius, I think, is 22. The song is really, it's about a friend of mine who was going through a rough divorce. And so it's the duet's this man and woman confronting each other, and it's kind of haunting, and the sax worked perfectly for that. Mm. So then if we bring up What's Your Game, that's a bit more of a Stevie Ray Vaughan kind of rock song. So the album's really kind of a rock guitar album overall, and that one will kind of give you a little bit of a different feel. So this guitarist is a guy named Jimmy Osterman, who also plays for the Joey Allen Band in town, and he's pretty extraordinary. In fact, as we were progressing, I asked Jimmy to start giving me guitar lessons. So he's actually my guitar teacher now, too, and he's just a great guy. And Jay Furiuso is playing drums on this, and my good friend James Warner is playing bass in, like, all my projects, so he plays bass on every one of my songs on this album, and he's more of a jazz guy who can play any style. So, it seems like jazz guys can all do that because it's such an advanced form of music, and I'm not good enough to really play pure jazz, but I'm a rock guy who can dabble at jazz and write a little bit of jazz stuff. But these are all projects that require a lot of input. My good friend Tommy Burnett, out at Iron Smoke Whiskey, runs a Tommy Burnett band, and he used to play in Modern English, that band, and so he's giving
Modern
me,
English?
Yeah.
Like, Melt With You, Modern
I'll,
English?
I'll Stop the World
wow.
and Melt With You. He toured the world with those guys, cool. And so Tommy's that guy. And so tremendous music advice from him. And then Jeff Gilhart, collaborated on production for this whole album, and he's my recording engineer. And Jeff is amazing. Decades of tremendous experience, you know, from recording Lou Gramm and so forth. And he's Ferdinand J. Smith, who just got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, describes Jeff as one of the local cats in town in the music world. And Jeff is. He's that guy. And he's also a really talented guitarist, and he's got a great ear. So he recorded, did all the recording engineering on this. And he's, so these are all, you get a lot of people to work with you. It's an ensemble, really, as these things develop. And this is a great town for that, because we have so much talent musically and even around the fringes of music in the production realm of music.
What happened between when you were 7, learning guitar and writing music in your teens, that you took this break and now you're back full stop?
Well, you know, it comes back to actually deciding that you want to really create a product and get out there and work for something that's more than just me playing with my friends, or which is what I was doing for years and years and years. And that's fun, and that was tremendous fun. And performing live, that's a great time. But when you realize that, hey, when people ask me, you know, so what can I listen to that's yours, you have to actually sit down and create a product. And that's a whole another learning set. So learning how to get into the studio and produce this and create that ensemble, and as Jack Furyk said, it also takes money. You have to be able to afford to do it, and it's not super cheap. Although, with the advent of, you know, home recording studios and recording technology has come so far, you can create a halfway decent product for not a lot of money now. But then you get, you know, people like Jeff Gilhart involved, and it gets better and better and better. And Tommy Burnett's advice, and ask friends who are musicians to come in. I'm sure I'll be talking to Jack Furyk after this show, because it's a community. It's a network of people, and the more people you know in this town who are really talented, I find musicians tend to be very willing to help each other and move forward. And especially now, it's such an odd time in the musical world. How do you go out and make money in music? How do you actually make a living? Most people kind of cobble together a living of teaching and doing, you know, they get some songs out on Taxi for, there's a website called Taxi where you can actually get out onto TV shows and so forth. So they do that, but people are, musicians are really willing to help each other move their careers forward.
And where can we find you? If we want to learn more about your music, check out your shows.
We're on the web, but I think the best way is come out on October 25th, see the album release party, and buy the album, please, Spotify. It's Jack Baron and the Third Rail. The album is called Mind the Gap, which my son came up with. He's looking down at the Third Rail in New York, and he said, the Third Rail, in an ominous kind of tone. And and that, I said, that's a great name for a band. And then my wife said, watch the gap. Oh, in England, they say mind the gap. So that's how that all came to be.
That's great. Listeners, we're seeing the phone starting to ring, your feedback coming in via email as well. You can join this conversation and share the passions that you are revisiting at any point in your life. 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI. 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org, and you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. We'll take a short break. When we come back, Laura's story, Lorraine's story, your stories, listeners. More Connections next. I'm Megan Mack. Monday on The Next Connections, we talk about the Environmental Innovation Awards and Symposium at the Seneca Park Zoo Society. It's an inaugural event that honors regional conservation and environmental efforts. We'll be joined by members of the zoo and also the featured speaker, Bill Browning, who will discuss business innovation inspired by nature. That's Monday. Talk to you then. You are listening to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about creativity and how it can be the quote-unquote cure for the midlife crisis, but not just necessarily a midlife crisis. Maybe you just need something new in your life. You want to be re-energized. You want to change things personally or professionally. You decide to revisit a passion from your past. Our guests in studio are sharing their stories with us. We just heard from Jack Furyk and Jack Baron, two local members of rock bands, and you can find their bands and their music online and their stories online. We'll link to all those on our website. And we're also starting to hear from some of the listeners. Keith, hang on the phone with us for just a few minutes, because I want to talk to Laura Fleming about following the fear of improvisation. And I know Laura's been doing improv for how many years?
About eight, I think, 8 or 9 years. Yeah, and I have no sense of time. So.
It goes by so quickly,
it does.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
And you fell into improv after you recommended that your son do it. I'm just revisiting your story from earlier.
Yeah.
He decided not to. You thought, maybe that means I want to do it. Got up on stage. I've seen you perform. You're phenomenal. You are so fun to play with as well. Tell us, what does improv do for you? Why did you decide to pursue it?
Well, it's like Jack and Jack were saying, it's a collaborative event. It's a team kind of meld, mind meld. And there's something that's very connecting and energizing about that for me. For me, it also has had a tremendous impact on my work, so much so that I have, for 3 years now, given a six-hour workshop on improv at a psychotherapy conference, because I think it's really helpful for people to, it's about acceptance. Yes, and is really all about radical acceptance of what you're being given and bringing something of yourself to that, which is really the same thing as what psychotherapy is about. So I also really believe that, like, living on the edge of your comfort zone and doing things that are difficult but possible, that creates mastery, and mastery is an antidote for depression. So if you want to have a vibrant life, it's making sure you're challenging yourself to do things that are just a little difficult, like not too hard, but a little hard. So I guess that would be what keeps me in it. Plus, I have made like some really wonderful friends. The Rochester improv community, I guess like the Rochester music community, very supportive, very tight, very like connecting, and wonderful in that way. So I've made some really good friends doing this.
What do you hope for the future of your improv career?
I just hope I keep playing and keep developing skills and getting better at getting out of my head, being completely in the moment, getting more honest with what I'm doing and saying.
I think in improv there's so much of an opportunity to try to let go of everything. It is difficult. It is scary to be on stage. I know the Jax, you probably get nervous when you're performing, and Lorraine, when maybe you're doing poetry performances, you're nervous, are you?
Storytelling,
yes. Do you get nervous before your performances?
I've had a few deer in the headlights along the way.
It's tough. So how do you push past that? If someone's listening and they think, I want to try to get up on stage, whether it's singing or storytelling or improv or whatever it is, I want to go paint, but I'm afraid because I don't think I'm very good and I'm not sure how to approach it. What's your advice to someone like that who's ready but just a little too nervous?
You can't really let fear drive the bus, because it will take you down a road that you don't really want to go down. I think, like, with fear, you have to challenge it. And I oftentimes encourage people to ask themselves, what's the absolute worst thing that could happen? Mm-hmm. Right? The absolute worst. So the absolute worst thing that could happen if you're doing improv, I guess, you get on stage and you just don't have any idea what to say. And you start stuttering and maybe you burst into tears because, you know. Okay, so if that were to happen to me, what would I do about that? And I guess what I would do is I would count on my team to come justify that and, like, make it a good reason why I'm bursting into tears on stage. Like, I trust other people to bail me out of that. So I could survive that. It wouldn't be the end of me. So you challenge it. What's the worst? And then how would I survive that? I think that's the way. That's one way to push past fear.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of just how you apply this to your work, I find that very interesting, that you're teaching seminars about the benefits that it can have to combating anxiety and depression or working through it. Talk a little bit about the mental health aspects, because I think for all of these creative passions, there are ways that everyone individually can explore something like that to work through something that's difficult for them. Just what's the science, Laura, behind that? What's the research say?
Well, workshops that I do are for the psychotherapist. And it's really just further training on being right in the moment, not like up in your head about where this client or this person you're working with should be or what they are, but exactly where they are, and being more tuned in and honest about your own response to them. That there's something very freeing. Actually, people who have been in workshops with me send me text messages saying, I was really stuck in this situation and I thought about this thing we did in the workshop and it really helped me move past it. I love that. That's very validating. But I encourage people to do things like creative arts of any kind because it does build your sense of yourself, of who you are. And if you know who you are, then there's probably not much you can't do.
Lorraine, when it comes to, go ahead.
Well, I'm just thinking that having heard the word collaborative and support, that any group that I have been in since I've been an adult, there have been other people. I don't do some of these things by myself like I would like to. I like the push and the encouragement of people that I'm with. And we all have a different way that we approach things, but for the most part, I felt that people have always been supportive and patient with us, with me. I also think that, I'll give my pie baking as a thing. When I teach that, it is therapeutic for everybody who has their hands in the dough. And the confidence that they wish to have. And I know that's just a sample of the way I feel groups work, especially the ones that I'm in. And also, this is important to me, is that people should not give up. They shouldn't stop. They should seek out. There's a lot of groups that work in our age group with transportation, anything else that they might want. And I feel sharing with each other is one of the most important things. And the other thing I do for myself is that I have a lot of fun with me and about me.
I think that's the underlying thing here. You want to have fun and you want to get better at your craft. Lorraine, do you find that when you work with other people, your skills are improving? Do they make you a better artist?
My most recent time has been a mentoring event, and we just paint. And if we have a question, we ask and we run around and see each other's work. But it's just so comforting to know that if you have a question or a comment or worry, that they're there and we're all ages.
I'd like to know more about your storytelling too. So what kinds of stories are you telling and can we come see you perform?
The group that I'm in is a group that's been out for 20 years, and it's called Women of the Well, and it's our 20th anniversary. I haven't been in it all those years, but many. And we write our own materials, and then we do workshops and retreats on these stories of women of the Bible. It's been a wonderful stretching for me as time has gone on.
Does your family come watch you perform?
They usually do, but we've been out of town a little bit. But there is a website for that, womenofthewell.com, and we have a schedule, a busy one for fall.
So of all the things that you do, I know you're making pies, you're writing poetry, you're telling stories, you're painting. Out of all of these things, if you had to choose one that's your favorite, that's your true passion, which one do you think that would be?
I would say the painting, but pie is up there pretty high.
You can have two. You can have two.
They
have
painting those, with pie.
I was going to say they have those painting with a twist workshops. We could do painting and pie with Lorraine. Are you interested in a new business opportunity, Lorraine?
No. No, not really.
Well, I mean, pie is... If it were me, it would be a pie because, you know, I love to cook as well as to play. But, you know, it all goes back to community. You know, you're serving people. You're feeding people. Art feeds the soul and pie feeds the body. So,
that's right.
You know.
And I think it makes your brain work in different ways, too. Whatever you're doing all day long, you know, for your job, with your family, whatever it is, and then you go and you do this thing that's a hobby, that's for fun, I think Right, Laura? Is this science?
Absolutely.
It helps your brain. It moves your brain in different ways.
Right. It's stress. It integrates. Actually, it integrates your brain. The left, right, top, bottom. And an integrated brain is a happy brain.
Well, let's turn to the phones now because a few of you want to share your stories and your passions. Up first is Keith in Farmington. Go ahead, Keith.
Hi. Other than being an amateur radio call-in person.
Yes, Keith is one of our regulars.
About 9 years ago, and I'm past retirement age now, I became a volunteer EMT, which I still do. But I have, and for a while I did, for about 10 years, I worked in stained glass, but that got boring. But I consider myself good enough that when XXI used to have their fine arts auction for a fundraiser, and they used to display the works at the Memorial Art Gallery. I had Grant Holcomb tell me that mine was too controversial.
I remember you sent me a picture of that. It had to do with a leg. I'll just tell our listeners.
Right. You're right. But the other thing, when you're talking about age, I've learned long ago that your age is a number, but not necessarily how old you are. I mean, there was a woman who's in her 80s and still active, and that's very good. Not to sound, I don't know what the word for it, but I try to, personally being an older person, and I constantly stay busy. I still work, and I probably work more now than I did when I was younger, and I have more stress. But I try to stay away from groups of elderly people. They seem to, when you have large groups, they just don't seem to be motivated to do anything else other than flip through the TV. I have stepchildren, and I have kids in the neighborhood that come over to the house, want to know if I want to play Spud. at the end of the evening of a rough round of Spud, I'm exhausted and I'm popping Tylenol. But I would rather do that than sit around and watch people yell at Fox TV News.
Well, I see the point you're making, Keith. Let's be careful not to generalize because I think we all have different experiences. Right. We're all at different places, right? But the point you're making, so many of us, including yourself, are getting out and trying new things, doing new things to stay active. And I think a lot of that has to do with staying relevant. So we did a whole show on this program about once we reach a certain age and we want to stay relevant, how do we do that? And I think you're all doing that right now. You're finding ways to connect outside of your jobs or outside of your families. And that's important. You want to have something that you wake up for in the morning or many things to wake up to that you're excited about. Up next on the phones is Ted in York. Go ahead, Ted.
Oh, hello. Yes, I was going to say I lead a community steel drum band down in Livingston County, and it's for teens and adults. It's all community-based, and it is a great way for people to participate in music and creative art and all ages. It's a wonderful community. I just thought it applied to so many of the different things people have been talking about here.
Absolutely. What's it called, Ted?
It's called Steel Alchemy.
Steel Alchemy.
Steel Alchemy. Awesome. Yes.
Where can we learn more about it?
I do have a Facebook page, Steel Alchemy, on Facebook, and that has contact information too.
Great. Awesome. Well, thanks for calling the show. We appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
I read another New York Times piece sort of encouraging people on how to be creative. I want to run through their list of suggestions and see what you all think and if you have any comments or questions about them. The first one is give yourself permission. Do you think we hold ourselves back too much? Lorraine, do you think we're too critical of ourselves?
Not anymore.
You're not anymore. Good. Good.
Good for you.
Good.
It's awesome.
In general, yes, that's the number one issue that I deal with in my office, people being too judgy of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jax?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, we were talking before about, you know, the biggest fear that I had when I was, you know, back in the audition process, you know, to get back into the game. And, you know, you always do have those moments of self-doubt. But because it's collaborative, because you're joining a community, if you're in with the right people, you cover for each other. You have each other's backs. You know, I mean, you do this in the improv as well, Laura, and you know, and it, Yeah, it's you get your gang.
Yeah.
You know?
Related. Oh, go ahead.
That helps a lot. The one thing, though, is when you're up on stage or you're releasing a song or putting out a painting, it's if you're self-critical, and I am, I think we all are.
You have to.
You have to be, exactly. Otherwise, it's not going to be a quality product. So there's a story about Picasso. They caught him in the Met with a charcoal trying to update one of his paintings, one of his drawings. And so they stopped allowing him in for a little while. I don't know if it's true or not, but that's the story that's out there. And so just getting this into a production level where I could release it on Spotify for these 12 songs, I kept wanting to go back and make this one better and this one better. It took a lot longer than I thought. And like Jack Furyk, he had 100 songs coming in and he got to 10 he liked. I had maybe only 30 coming in and I got to 12 I liked. Just deciding on those was a lot of work. And Laura, when you're putting stuff into your act or getting ready to go up on stage, you know, you want it to be a hit when you get up there and get people laughing.
And sometimes you bomb, not you, Laura, but the collective.
Oh,
you.
Yeah.
It's tough. Do you ever, Lorraine, do you ever go back and look at a painting that you've created or a piece of poetry and think, oh, I wish I would have done this a little differently? And how do you cope with that? Because you don't want to continue to revise your work because at that time that represented who you are.
I try not to do that. I do look at, I'm a little critical as I'm painting along. That's why it takes me a little bit longer. But it is not the good thing to try to go back and change anything. It is what it is.
Do you feel proud of the work, even though it may not be your favorite piece or your...
Yes, I do. I think that's why it takes me so long.
So the other quick pieces on the list here, be confident, foster creativity through parenting. So that goes back to what Laura was saying. She was encouraging her son to try something. She ended up trying it herself. Be imperfect. You're going to fail, and that's okay. And the fifth one, take a nap. Sometimes your brain just needs a rest, so take a nap. So I'd like to thank all of our guests today for joining me for this conversation, a great way to end the week. Jack Furyk, Jack Baron, Laura Fleming, and Lorraine Fusar. Thank you so much for being here. Good luck with all
thank
of your
you.
Work.
Let's
you can find,
sometime.
I'll link everything on our podcast page. You're hearing some of Jack Baron's band right now. Our thanks to Rob Braden, our engineer, Tiana Mignon, on phones today. Thank you. I'm Megan Max, sitting in for Evan Dawson. He will be back on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody, and thank you for supporting Public Radio.